What's up everyone, this is Darius Kalbarczyk, co-founder of MGPO and JSPO and AngularMaster.dev and WorkshopFest.dev. Welcome back to the Angular Master Podcast. Today, we've got a special guest straight from Lyon, France, software development cook, teacher and coach, GDE, ladies and gentlemen, Jonas Jaidi. Hi, Jonas. How are you?
Amazingly fine. And you? How are things going?
Thank you. I'm great. So for those who don't know you yet, please tell us about yourself.
I'm a web developer, but I'm also I coach teams. So I like to help teams get the best of their development experience. So I never know what to say. I'm a developer or a coach, but both probably. So really passionate about web development in general, whether it's front-end or back-end, mainly in JavaScript and TypeScript, of course. And I'm also passionate about extreme programming, and we'll probably talk about that later, because I'm really convinced about, the thing is not moving fast and learning things and doing, some complex things, but the thing in software is that software is a social process, as Kent Beck puts it, and we have to move all together as a team, as a community. It's not about being smarter than the other people and having the answers that other people don't have. We have to move together. And that's the mindset I'd like to advocate for.
How did your adventure in programming begin?
Sometimes I hear other people who started pretty early, and I'm pretty surprised. When I got my first computer, I was mainly playing games and doing some foolish things, but I started programming really late. So after when I started my engineering school, so when I was 20 years old or something, and my first experience that really changed my way of software development is joining this little company in Paris, which was called Z Slide at the time. And it was an extreme programming company. So we had this really culture of extreme programming. I knew nothing about extreme programming, and I knew nothing about Python, and we were writing apps in Python. So I just joined the team. And the amazing thing is that we were all doing everything all together with lots of pair programming and working together. And after, 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I was really super familiar with the product, with Python, with testing, not because I can learn fast. I don't learn fast, but just because the team was taking time with me and we're all taking time with each other to move forward all together. So that really changed my life. And then one of the next experiences, 1 year after or something, I moved to a bank and I was like, oh my God, this must be crazy. If a small company can have so many automated tests and such an amazing workflow, then the bank must be really amazing. And then the first day I was looking at the code base, I was like, guys, does anyone know where is the tests folder? Because I can't find it. And they're like, what kind of tests? We don't have any tests. What do you mean? I mean, okay. And is there a style guide? Because each file seems to have I can already see which person wrote which file, because everyone is their own style. So is there a style guide? They're like, no. So then that's when I knew that, okay, I have something to change there and I have to find a strategy, because it was a large organization and a large team. And I think that's how it all started and how I wanted to figure out ways and strategies of changing the way people develop to work together in a smooth way without stress and push things to production on Friday evening.
Your open source contributions include projects related to Angular and testing. Could you share how those projects have benefited the Angular community and how they tie into your workshop's content?
The project I started that I wanted to be the most impactful were not, and the ones that I wasn't expecting anything about them got more impact. So my main contributions are, or like project that where I'm maintainer are the JS Cutlery libraries. So JS Cutlery is an organization we created with Edward Boson, who's very active in the Angular and NX community. And the funny thing is that we started a couple of libraries, and most of them are in the DevKit, JS Cutlery DevKit, and it's mainly some utils that can help with RxJS and signals and stuff like that. And on the other hand, in order to publish and version these libraries that are all in the Mono repo, we had to build something which was called JS Cutlery Semver, and which ended up being like one of the or the largest, the most used library plugin, NX plugin in the community. And luckily, like Edward takes a lot of time maintaining that. So he's really the amazing maintainer. So that helps a lot because I'm actually not good at maintaining things. So I tend to start things, then start another thing, you know, how hard it can be in open source. For testing, I built some tooling to help with harnesses for Cypress component testing and for Cypress testing in general. So this is a tricky part, but the thing is, the problem we have with testing in general is, especially when you're doing end-to-end testing, is interacting with the DOM, and you don't want your test to get polluted with implementation details like how the date picker works, for example. So Angular has this thing called Angular CDK harness that helps you implement what I like to call gloves, personally, which are like things that helps your test not get their hands dirty with implementation details. And it works with Jasmine and Karma and Jest, but it didn't work with Cypress, of course, because there was no platform for that. So we built a platform to bridge that gap. But we have some ideas that we'd love to implement, and I'm refraining from starting things if we don't have a large team to start that. So if you want to contribute to some tooling around Angular and testing, and for example, bring in harnesses to playwrights, get in touch with us.
What are the key benefits of incorporating testing into an Angular application?
I'd say to develop faster. Well, there is a common misconception about tests is that people are like, I don't have time for tests. It's going to slow me down to write tests. I know it's important. I know it's going to help with the quality, but actually it's not only going to help with quality, but it's going to help with speeding up your development workflow. So you can make changes without having to open a window next to your code and check the form manually, then get back to your code. That's personally what I call the developer time bias, meaning that if you spend 20 minutes writing a test and then 10 minutes writing the feature, you feel like you've wasted 20 minutes, even though this is not the real ratio that you'll have. But anyway, you feel like you wasted 20 minutes and that the whole thing felt like 2 hours because you were writing tests and you didn't really enjoy it. But when you just write the feature, you feel that you just spent 10 minutes on it. But actually, it's usually 3 hours. It just feels faster because you're making a change. Then you open the window. Then you navigate to that page. Then you fill the form. Then there's a bug. Then you get back to the code. Then you make a change. Then you get back to the page. And you keep switching from one to the other. And at the end of the day, just wrote a couple of lines of code, but it took you like real hours, but it felt like 5 minutes just because you were really concentrated. But when you do TDD, for example, and you write your tests first and then you move to your code, it's actually super fast because you get quick feedback and instant feedback from the test that says, oh, you're wrong. Now you're good. Now you're okay. Oh, hot, hot, hot. Oh, now you're cold. Now you're close to the feature. So that's the idea of test. So clearly, faster development and quality, and of course, faster for the whole team, because it also means that when you bring like newcomers to your team, when you hire people, they will be able to they will be able to contribute really easily. It will not have to be, they will not be afraid of breaking anything if the project or the product is properly tested and covered. I think what happens, and that's my observation from the teams I meet, and it's also because it's a mistake I've made by myself, is the challenge of figuring out the right testing strategy. Because the two extremes of testing is no tests, I mean, no automated tests, of course, and the other extreme is having a really bad testing strategy, meaning tests that are highly coupled to implementation details. So each time you change something, it breaks the whole test. Or tests that are slow for different reasons we can talk about later. And that can slow people. Like if the test is something that should help you. If the test is there raising like false positives and things like that, then there's a problem. If the tests are flaky, then there's also a problem. So we have also to figure out a strategy where the test is really helpful to push us forward and move faster. But of course, it's a trade-off again there about how many tests, how, why, where. And
you're listening Angular Master Podcast. Listen, code, repeat. Everything you need to know to become an Angular super developer.
What does the phrase extreme programming means to you?
My take on extreme programming is that it's Scrum without bullshit and with values and lots of practices. What I mean by that is Scrum is interesting. There are a lot of interesting things in Scrum, but I like to just joke about that. But the main problem with Scrum in Agile in general is that first, we ended up focusing on the ceremonies and the events instead of like the whole experience. In extreme programming, what matters is really the interaction between the business and the developers. And for example, in extreme programming, what we'll be looking for is that instead of having a product owner or like an intermediate person that tries to grasp the business and give it to the developers, in extreme programming, what we'd like to have is the client in the office, you know, full time, like listening to all the discussions we have, or even if we're remote, like on Slack. So like a direct collaboration between the business and the developers, which is very interesting. And the other thing is, in extreme programming, there are practices that are fundamental in extreme programming that you don't find in Scrum, because I think it was planned initially, but they were like, if we start asking technical questions to sell certificates to be whatever master, Scrum master, or whatever, who doesn't want to, like Kent Beck puts it this way, Kent Beck, father of extreme programming, puts it this way, who doesn't want to be a certified something master? Like everybody want to be a certified Angular master or whatever, you know. So they wanted to sell certificates, and they moved out like all the technical aspects. And the technical aspects of extreme programming, like the practical ones, are like collective ownership, like through pair programming, like simple design, refactoring, testing. So these are all the practices that we all apply somehow. And also there is one of my favorite ones is in extreme programming is continuous integration. And the problem today is when we say continuous integration, we all think about GitHub Actions, CircleCI, blah, blah, all the tooling, but these are like tools that help with continuous integration. But continuous integration is integrating changes continuously, which means I'm not going to start a PR and put it there and wait for 2 weeks for someone to review it and then merge it, because that's integration hell. So you want to merge your changes not only frequently but continuously. So how close? So my idea behind that is the thing about extreme programming would be a metaphor to that would be like, how close could we be to that time where you would just edit the code on an FTP server and see the changes instantly, but in between your change and between your computer and that FTP server, there are just like a couple of tests that are really fast that can let you put the change or not. And the other thing about extreme programming is the values we have For instance, one of my favorite values in extreme programming are respect and courage. And for example, respect, the first time I read that, I'm like, respect, of course. I mean, like, we're all nice with each other in my team, and we respect each other, it's fine. But then that was not it. It was the respect that when you write a code, when you put like two ternary operators inside each other, that's not respectful for your readers, like the people who are going to read your code. So it's the respect in that case. Like if I share a PR with 3,000 lines of change and I don't explain anything and it's big and blah, 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 that's not very respectful for the person who's going to review that if you're not doing pair programming. So that's very important, like the respect on one hand. And the other hand, on the other hand, is there's courage, and the courage of like trying things, going to the like when you start something, try to finish it. And also the courage on the other hand, which is you give up sometimes when it's not a good idea, you know, or you try when you hesitate, instead of like writing tables and trying to compare on the table on whatever, what about splitting the team into two smaller teams and let's take a few days and implement both implementations and see how it goes. And then we'll make a really good decision altogether, because we'll be like, okay, it's easier that way, you know? So this is the practices that we have on extreme programming, you know.
Could you explain the different types of tests in Angular, such as unit tests, integration tests, and end-to-end tests?
Except for end-to-end tests, where I guess we'll all agree a little bit about what they are. Like, okay, I'm testing the whole thing from one end to the other. Okay, it seems like, okay, I'm testing like an end user the whole app. Unit tests and integration tests, they don't reach any consensus in terms of definitions. I mean, like, that's a typical thing I ask people to do. Like, ask other people in your organization or your team their own definition of unit tests and integration tests on a paper, and there compare them and you see what will happen. And the main problematic one is a unit test, because what is a unit? Is it the piece of code? Is a function a unit, a class a unit? Or isn't it like the dimension of the feature, not the code, like the unit, which is when I create an object somewhere, or when I create something on my list, it should have an ID. Is that a unit? Or when I create an object and it has a creation date, is that another unit, or the whole thing is a unit? What does that mean? Well, I'm not going to answer that because I don't care. So the definition that I choose is I split tests into two worlds of tests, the narrow tests and the wide tests. Okay. So the narrow tests are, my definition is really clear. It's any test that takes less than 100 milliseconds to run, which is easy to isolate and parallelize, so it doesn't share data with other tests and whatever. And the third rule is when the test fails, it's instantly diagnosable. Like, you don't need to be like a genius and know everything about the product to debug that test. Like, the test is shouting relatively easily where the problem comes from. Like, you don't have to go through hundreds of files to try to figure out where that comes from. And so, is that a unit test? Is our narrow test unit test? I don't know. I don't care. Can you use a database in a narrow test? I don't know. Because if it takes less than 100 milliseconds, if you manage to create a database and use it in less than 100 milliseconds, and you can parallelize your test because you have a different instance for each test, and it's not hard to debug because the whole thing under test is relatively small, then it's a narrow test. But probably some people will say it's not a unit test because it's using a database. But no, databases, we were avoiding databases in unit tests because they were slow. But maybe today it's different, you know. And so that's like, some people will say that my narrow tests are like unit tests, but I don't care, maybe. And wide tests are just the opposite. So they could be integration tests, maybe. But some integration tests can be considered narrow. I don't know. And so why test is each test that can be slow or hard to parallelize and isolate. For example, imagine you test your a whole app or some part of your Angular app that interacts with a backend, and that backend is stateful, and so there are side effects. But so that can be considered a wide test. And and of course, if we get back just to Angular, for example, if I test three components together, is that a unit test or is that an integration test? I mean, I don't care. That's if it's fast, if it's less than 100 milliseconds and it's easy to isolate and parallelize, of course it is, because it's just using stuff in the browser in memory. But the third one, the third rule is the hardest one. Is it easy to diagnose? If things go sour, if the test fails, well, that will tell you if it's a narrow test or wide. So sometimes when you have like three small components that interact with each other all the time and it's really simple, then maybe that's a narrow test. But if they are very complex, then maybe it's a wide test. So that's how I try to define things. And at the end, what matters is not the category of tests and the typology of tests. It's more of their properties. Like, are you confident with your tests to go to production? Are your tests fast enough? Are you spending hours debugging tests or not? So that's what we want to focus on. Like, are my tests helping me go fast, or are they just slowing me down or taking too much time?
What are the best practices for mocking dependencies and services in Angular unit tests?
So the first thing I'd say is, I don't like giving like best practices, because I always say today's best practices are tomorrow's bad practices. So I generally give like current recommendations or my personal recommendations. But concerning dependencies, the thing is when you have like and even let's focus on the case of Angular. So when you have Angular and the app wants to interact with an external system, so it will generally interact through with a remote service through an HTTP API, whether it's GraphQL or whatever. And the thing is, you can cut the cable at any place you want. And you cut the cable and you replace that part with a test double, which is like the right wording, because there are different types of test doubles. So you have mocks, you have spies, you have stubs. And before giving like a recommendation on that, I'll give like a bad practice that I consider being a bad practice. In most cases, not all, for some cases it's good, is generally what I've noticed is lots of people will mock the dependencies or put a test double at the infrastructure layer, which is the HTTP layer, and which kind of, at the end of the day, couples your tests to a complex implementation detail, which is HTTP, which can evolve in the future, meaning tomorrow you might use GraphQL for some endpoints. And I see that really frequently. Okay, you don't see many teams change their database or things like that, but changing the protocol to communicate with a remote service is relatively frequent. And also, the problem is a remote service will, when you call an HTTP server, for example, it will often respond with more data than you really need. So when you start creating this HTTP stubs, do you use the same data, like the whole data? How do you maintain that data in sync with the contract, with the OpenAPI specification and the schema? So there are tooling, but it's really hard. It's a really hard problem. And also, if you put the whole data, that's a lot of effort. You only need two fields for your app. So do you just put the two fields, but the day you're going to use the third one? What are you going to do? So in my opinion, in general, the first thing is, the first question to ask is, do I really need to mock my dependencies or not? Meaning, do I need a unit test or narrow test, or do I need a wide one? Maybe sometimes a wide test is a better choice. Maybe not. It depends on how fast it is and how stable it is. And if it's not a good choice, if you want to isolate, then maybe it's better to use a test double on the layer that you control. So you create an adapter or an interface, like what I like to call a repository interface, to reproduce what we can see on the back end. So it's like a class, like a service that makes the HTTP calls, and it's the only place where you're allowed to make GraphQL or HTTP calls or whatever. And that class, you control its interface. The front-end team controls its interface. So you can easily provide a fake or a stub or a spy or a test double just for that part. And the day the HTTP interface changes and you're using GraphQL or whatever, you don't have to touch your tests. But then comes a question is, hey, how do you make sure that your repository service is working, you know? So that's a real challenge. So there are two ways. Either you're counting on end-to-end tests or smoke tests that are just testing the whole app, and you're like, okay, if it's making one call or two, it's probably good. Maybe that's enough. Or sometimes you're going to need what Martin Fowler used to call for a while and still now the contract testing, which is not contract testing like tools like Pact, etc. It's a contract test is a really special test that you write once and you run on both the test double, like the fake implementation, and the real implementation. Okay. And it runs twice. So if you change the fake, you change the behavior, and it's not doesn't behave exactly like the real backend, then the test will fail. So you'll have to maintain that test to make it work for both. It can be a bit challenging. So that's why sometimes just a smoke test and end-to-end test that tests the nominal case is enough, but sometimes you will want to add some contract tests just to make sure your spies are good.
What is Angular's approach to end-to-end testing, and how does Protractor fit into this picture?
Well, it's been a while that we knew that Protractor was dying, but until recently there was no official alternative from the Angular team for end-to-end tests. I think since Angular 16, but I might be wrong, the ng end-to-e command suggests, as you might have noticed, to choose between different schematics that will set up like different tools, like Cypress or what else, like a driver IO or something like that. And they're missing Playwright right now, which is getting lots of momentum, which is a really good alternative to Protractor today. The thing is, they're just missing it because there's no schematic that was implemented by either the Angular or Protractor team. So that's, again, if someone wants some open source to do some open source contribution, there's definitely something to do on that field. Meanwhile, you can use NX if you're not already using NX. That comes with generators that will generate your Angular apps and libraries with Playwright. For a while, Cypress was really the main option, but Playwright is getting it's pretty exciting because not only you get lots of similar features, but also the developer experience, in my opinion, was not great on Playwright at the beginning because you had to change your test, then run it again. But recently, thanks to the UI mode and stuff like that, you get a really good experience, and the code gen, you can generate your tests, which are, like, we know as developers, we don't like code generators, but this one is really crazy because it lets you control things, you know, so, and it doesn't generate ugly stuff. And especially if you're still in the protractor world, it's perfect because like you get like this async await really close experience. And in my opinion, it's really a very interesting approach, like the Playwright approach, because the community is pretty large and you can get everything without having you don't need any cloud service right now for anything because you have sharding for parallelizing tests. There are a lot of things to handle, like all the setup configs and like authentication, like you authenticate once and you reuse the session and stuff like that. Of course, you have that in Cypress too, but the experience in Playwright is pretty exciting. So definitely worth checking if you're not already using it.
What are some common challenges developers faced when writing and maintaining tests for large Angular applications?
The first one is adding tests a bit late. So the app is already large and the team has a really bad velocity, like you're not releasing anything. You're just spending time on bug fixes. And if you're lucky, if you're using points or whatever, you put points on bug fixes so you feel like you're moving forward, but you're not moving forward. You're just fixing bugs. So that's a really hard one. It's a really tough one because adding tests to like a legacy application or an existing application is really hard because some kind of tests will help you if done from the beginning, will help you get like a good design. So tests help with a good design. So if the app was created like in a chaotic fashion or such, it's going to be hard to add tests afterwards. The other challenge I see when writing tests is, of course, getting to write tests for the first time. Like it's really hard because people sometimes they never wrote tests. It's a different mindset. It's a different way of thinking. You're not writing a feature. You're thinking about your use case, and like here you have to think about what's the arrange phase of your test. What do you need to set up? And how are you gonna test it? And what are the assertions you're gonna make? So I see that challenge. I see people asking me I don't know what to test and how. You know, so the what's and how are really challenging. But so when they ask me about what should I test, I'm like, ask the business. what are you implementing? What is the feature you're testing? So try to think about the feature, and then how do I test it? Then that's really hard because you have to learn about like different stacks, about Jest, about Playwright, about Cypress, about Vtesting. But the cool thing is that when you learn all these tools, the first thing is that knowledge is quite transferable. So once you learn how to test in, even when you learn how to test in Python, you can test in JavaScript. So that's the first thing. It's just something that you will reuse your whole life. And then the other challenge is not about just writing tests, because people, once they get to that level, so I have like this thing that I call the stairway of the testing needs. The first thing is people need tests, so they're able to write tests. But then the challenge comes when you're like, we have lots of tests, but we still have bugs. And people don't trust their tests. And that's also a challenge, probably because the tests might test some really small system under tests. So that's also like some people go through two extreme strategies. Some teams go through really tiny unit tests or narrow tests or super large end-to-end tests. And both of them have like different problems. So going to these two extreme directions can be pretty dangerous. So it's a trade-off again. But at the end, teams manage to write tests, and then comes the real challenge, maintenance. And that's really what I like to focus about. Like, again, anyone can write software. Some people can write tests once they learn, but anyone can write tests at the end if you take time to learn. But it's really hard to implement something that you can maintain for years. So the challenge then is writing tests that are first readable, meaning that anyone in the team or someone that joins the team later can read them. And also about maintainability, what happens a lot is that tests get coupled to can be what we call over-specifying, meaning that they're really coupled to the way your components are structured, or the way they get coupled to the implementation details. And the day you refactor something, it breaks hundreds of tests, and these are all false positives, and that's something that is problematic. So you want to be flexible. You want to be able to refactor, split the code, regroup the code, refactorize things without breaking that many tests. So, and that's a real big issue I see with teams. The last thing is not only making them maintainable, but you also want them to be helpful and meaningful, because it's really good to have like lots of tests that are easy to maintain, but the day they fail or something, you want to understand why. I mean, like, if you see a test that says, oh, I'm sick, I'm expecting 57 and I got 56 and a half, what does that mean? Is it bad? What is 57? You know, and I'm pretty sure that you can relate to that. Like, it happens. Like, what's this test? Is it okay? Is it not? I don't know. Should I just say it should be more than 50 and less than 60? Or what's the precision there? So you want your test to be precise about what's happening. I mean, like, how bad is it if it's just showing the first name and not the last name, or showing the first name and the last name? And that's something that sometimes tests are really over-specifying and just expecting like this huge object to equal this huge object. But what's important there? What's important there? The shape of the ID, or the creation date, or the name, you know? And that's the main challenge I see in testing, like implementing tests that are fast, maintainable, cheap to maintain, and really precise about what's wrong in your app. You know, you want your test to be a really amazing oracle next to you that says, the thing you're doing, it's good. Oh, now it's not good. Oh, now it's good. Now it's not good because this will be okay, good. So that's what you want your test to look like. You know, you don't want a test to be something like this old oracle that's like, okay, just write your code, I'll tell you in 2 hours. No, once all the tests are passing. And something is wrong, but I don't know where.
Can you explain the concept of test-driven development and its application in Angular development?
TDD, it's also, again, it's a practice from extreme programming. It was invented by Kent Beck, the creator of extreme programming. But he always says he's just the finder of test-driven development. He's like, I didn't invent it. It's just a concept that was already there for, I don't know how you call that in English, but you know, like the when it was the paper with the holes, you know, and just met when computers were with the can't find the word, and with the paper cards, you know, and you just have to map to make sure the code is working, just make it run, and at the end it should have the same output. And so TDD, it's the idea of usually we just code and then manually test, or add test at the end when it's done, because that's how it feels natural when you're not familiar with TDD. But once you get to TDD, the other option becomes weird because you're familiar with TDD. So what it is? So test-driven development is simply you write your tests first, and then you make sure they fail, because if you write your tests and it passes, there's either a problem with the test, or you're super lucky because the feature was already there and the code was already answering to that test you're writing, which is cool. But it's really rare. So you write tests, you make sure they fail, and then you figure out a way of making them pass. So to make them pass and go green. So that's what we call the green phase. So it starts, it's the red phase first, so the tests are broken. Then there is the green phase where the tests are passing, but in the most simple way. And once it's done, then comes the last phase, which is refactor. And now you tidy up your code, you rename things, you split your code, and you do whatever you want. So that's how it goes. And it's very interesting. Why is it important? Because it helps us focus on the three parts of our brain, I'd say. The first one, when I'm writing my test, I'm not thinking about how I'm going to implement it. Am I going to use the router or the HTTP client or blah, 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 or whatever? I don't know which service, which class I'm going to use. Am I going to use signals or observables? I don't know, and I don't want to know right now. I'm just figuring out about my test, about how the feature is going to work. So the main thing I need is the business. I want to discuss with the domain experts and the business experts, what do they really want, and all the scenarios we have to think of. So I'm not focusing on implementation details. Then I'm just focusing on simple things, because how many times did it happen to you that you try to answer for a simple problem with a simple answer, and they're like, oh, I'm just going to refactor this thing. I'm just going to build like a little factory for that. I'm just going to build a little function that does this magic. And at the end, they just build a super spaceship that doesn't work. But at the beginning, at some point, it was working. So that's how you refactor. So you think about the test first, you make it pass, make it work, and then you improve things. And how does that work? And why is it important? The important thing here, there with TDD, there are different advantages, but the two main advantages is the instant feedback, because you're making your changes and you can see if the test is failing or not. You're not opening a window and checking stuff. And the other advantage also is how you know when you're done, because the test is passing, so you're finished. And sometimes we're just like trying to refactor again and adding stuff, but we don't need them because the test is satisfactory. And how do you implement TDD in an Angular application? Well, that's not easy, because you can't do TDD for everything. For example, if we're focusing on like services, TDD is relatively simple. But I say again, relatively compared to components. But when you're testing components, that can be a bit challenging, because if you're just focusing on the behavior, then TDD makes total sense, because you're like, okay, I am going to click on this button exactly like the business is speaking to you. When the user clicks next, you should display this, except if there's this condition, then the button should be grayed out and disable it for a second. And then after a second, it's visible again. So these business rules, you can implement them and you can implement your test. But the only thing where TDD, where we don't use TDD is for snapshots testing, where you just not testing the snapshot, the DOM, but like visual regression, and you're testing like the pixel perfect thing. Well, we're not going to use TDD for that, because you're not going to draw the pixel perfect answer and then write your test and make it work. So you just implement that thing and you run the test and make sure it fits. It doesn't have the visual regressions, but that's how it's going to work in Angular. So you're going to implement your interactions on the page. I'm going to click there. It should show that, and we're going to run that test until the test passes. And of course, the challenge with that is that sometimes people are like, yeah, but when you're writing your tests, you don't think about some details. And while you're implementing that thing, you're like, oh, depending on the local of the browser, I'm going to display this way or this way. Yeah, this happens. And then you add another test for that scenario, and you're still allowed to get back to your test and change it. You know, that's so sometimes people think that TDD is just like you write your test and you're not allowed to touch the test file forever. No, it's okay. It's a, you can ping pong, you can get back. And like my first start point is I just write the test with the it.todo, and I just write the name of the test. I want the test to do this, and I want the test to do that. And my next step is to do what I like to call comment-driven development. I just write in plain English without any Gherkin tooling or whatever, if people know about that. Just writing comments. Oh, I want, when I click there, I want things to do that. And you can already commit that and push that and share that in the main branch. And so people can give you feedback, and you can discuss this with your coworkers or in the business, and they'll be like, why do you want to disable the button? And you'll be like, I don't know, I thought that was a requirement. They're like, no, you didn't get it. They're like, oh, perfect. That's 1 hour work less. So I'm so happy with that. That's also something we love in extreme programming, is having less things to do. So, because the main source of bugs is code. So the less code there is, the less bugs there are. So if there are some things that we don't have to implement, then it's better. So.
Yeah, definitely. So during this this ping pong, as you said, you can rethink the application, the functionality. So it's really, really good.
Exactly. And the interesting thing is, as you say about that, like the thinking about the application is that, let me know if you see that around you, or if it happened to you. Like, we as developers, sometimes we do like a crazy thing. We think that I don't understand the business right now. It's not the way I'm going to implement this is not really clear. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to dive into the code and start coding. Then the idea will get clearer. No, it doesn't happen, because when you jump in the code, the idea gets fuzzier, because you're like, oh my God, there's this, that thing, there's that other case. So if you don't have like a clear scenario for your test from the beginning, and if you don't understand the business from the beginning, it's not going to work. So that's also an interesting about TDD. Yeah, it's as you said, exactly. It helps you focus on the business first.
How do you handle testing Angular forms and user interactions, including form validation?
I had this exact discussion about forms with Nicola, who is also like Angular GDE, and just a few days ago. So in Angular forms, it depends. Are you using reactive forms or template-driven forms? And there are the two ways of doing things. So if you're using template-driven forms, well, you'll have to test through the UI. And we'll talk about that. But if you're using reactive forms, there are trade-offs between template-driven forms and reactive forms. But if you use reactive forms and you have like complex logic with reactive forms, you know, the typical one where when the value of that control is this, you have to disable that other control, or the options of that other control are these ones, and et cetera. Well, the interesting thing is that you can test just like these hardcore cases, extreme cases, just with the reactive form, pure TypeScript logic. Nothing related to Angular or components or change detection or, you know, whatever. And of course, you will want to make sure that your reactive form is integrating properly with the UI, and you can add some UI tests for that. But if you're using template-driven forms, well, it's going to be harder to just isolate these pieces of logic, because one of the main challenges of template-driven forms is that everything is a bit coupled, because you need to inject the ng control, and you'll have to have the UI and etc. So you have to load the DOM, and you have to render the component. And in that case, if I'm testing forms, well, and I want to test the UI, then there are different techniques again to test the UI, and even beyond forms. So, to summarize, if you're using React forms, you will want to test the reactive logic, the React forms logic alone, and maybe test some UI. And if you're using template-driven forms, you will test it only through the UI. And if you want to test the UI, so you can use, what I like to use is the Angular testing library for multiple reasons, because it helps you like interact with the DOM with an abstract way. You don't have to query your selectors manually. It encourages the usage of area accessibility. So you grab things by role and placeholder and label and stuff like that by using a specific priority, which I invert here because label for placeholder, and it will help you. It will encourage you to use the right area attributes for your DOM, so like that, and the right DOM element. So that's an interesting thing. And the advantage is that it's using, you're probably using it on Jest mainly, and it's going to be really fast. But the problem is that if you're using Jest, you're using Jest DOM, and it's not a browser. And there is a main problem with that. It's the actionability of the actions we're doing on the DOM. And even though it's really well designed, it's not a real browser, so it doesn't test. It doesn't make sure, for example, that there is no layer on top of the input, for example, or that your inputs are not displayed all on top of each other for some awkward CSS reason. And so in order to do that, you'll need to use tools like Cypress or Playwright, where you have that integrated. For example, when you on those tools, like when you try to type on an input, it will first try to figure out the middle of the input element and then click in the middle and then interact with it. So if for some reason the button is on top or whatever, it's not going to work. So that's also these are tests which are very interesting. But so in order to test that UI, if I'm using Cypress and Playwright, what does that mean? So I have to load the whole app. So my test is going to be really super slow. And so no, so that's where it gets interesting to use things like Cypress component testing or Playwright's experimental component testing, where you can just load a component and its children and that part of your page and interact with it and even provide test doubles for the interactions with the rest of the API. So I think personally, that's the best way of testing the UI combined with some Jest or VTest logic that tests the reactive form complex conditions for the most complex forms. So the combination of both is pretty interesting.
We will soon see you at the workshop a day before ng Poland. What motivated you to create the Pragmatic Angular Testing Masterclass? And what are the main goals for this workshop?
The idea of this workshop is not to focus on this tool or that tool or this API or that API, because these things change. But what I want to share is really the techniques and the way we implement tests that are going to be cheap to maintain and cheap to read while still profitable. There are some really, I'm trying to really focus on some tips that will really change the way you test. For example, like the typical things are, what kind of example I can think of? Like my typical tip is, you know, when you have assertions, often people will have an expect and compare that value they're receiving to the expected value they're waiting for. And often that expected value is a large object with lots of properties. But which properties are important? What are you exactly testing? So I want the test to be more explicit. So we write them in a way where we show which properties are important and which properties are not important. This way, or we don't test these properties in all tests. So each test will test just a couple of properties that are important to them. This way, when you refactor things or you change the structure, it's just going to break one test, not like 20 or 30 tests, because they're all related to the same thing. There are also like some tiny little tips that can really change the way of testing. It's just like not using variables or dynamic parts in the expected part, because you want your test to be readable. And there is nothing worse than seeing expect A to equal B failing, because you don't know what's in A and what's in B. And especially the worst thing, that A can be undefined and B can be undefined too, and the test will be passing, but you don't notice it because there's a bug in the code and the test. So this, there are some little tidbits that, some little tips that will really help changing the way of testing. And the main goal is, again, how to write tests that are really fast and maintainable. And also, at the end, after we learn a couple of things, we figure out, I just don't give like a testing strategy, but I try to provide the tools to figure out what is the best testing strategy for your app. You're not going to test a blog, an Angular blog, the same way you're going to test an internal bank application or a user-centric application or an admin application. It depends on a lot of things. And this is the kind of things that I want to help people figure out, like the right proportion of tests and which kind of tests and stuff like that.
For those interested in attending your workshop, could you share any prerequisites or background knowledge that would be helpful to make the most of the learning experience?
Definitely, it's better if you're familiar with Angular, because that will be a prerequisite. But of course, we're not going to dive like into like Angular internals or whatever. So you don't have to be like an Angular guru or whatever. Just like you're used to use Angular. Of course, if you're familiar with testing in general, then you might get more things, you might learn more things. And if you're already familiar with the different tools we might be using, like Jest or maybe Cypress component testing, or maybe Playwright component testing, that will also help you grab some little tricks that might help you. So no matter what's your testing level, it's open. The only thing is that like the more advanced you are, the more experienced you are, you will get to learn more things, because often I have like some extra challenging questions for the more experienced ones. So you if you're experienced, you won't get bored. And if you're new, you learn things.
Amazing. So Yannis, thank you so much for today's podcast. It was a pleasure to have you here. I hope this is not the last time.
Me too. Thank you very much. I was always like dreaming of being part of this podcast, and I'm so happy. It's my first time at NG and JS Poland, so really for me, like, it's like a must go event. So like, it feels like the family reunion. It's Christmas before Christmas, so really I'm so happy with both the podcast and the event. I'm really looking forward for like whatever other session we can make.
Thank you so much.